and this white stuff began to fall, like a soft rain. At first I thought it was so beautiful, like feathers drifting from the sky, but it kept on and on, until I was frozen to the bone. The men had crusts of snow in their beards and on their shoulders, and it still kept coming. I was afraid it would never end.
John smiled. The wall loomed before them, glimmering palely in the light of the half-moon. In the sky above, the stars burned clear and sharp.
"Are they going to make me go up there?" Sam asked, his face curdled like old milk as he looked at the great wooden stairs. "I'll die if I have to climb that."
"There's a winch," John said, pointing. "They can draw you up in a cage." Samuel Tarley sniffed.
"I don't like high places."
It was too much. John frowned, incredulous.
"Are you afraid of everything?" he asked. "I don't understand. If you are truly so craven, why are you here? Why would a coward want to join the Night's Watch?"
Samuel Tarley looked at him for a long moment, and his round face seemed to cave in on itself. He sat down on the frost-covered ground and began to cry, huge, choking sobs that made his whole body shake. John Snow could only stand and watch. Like the snowfall on the Barrowlands, it seemed the tears would never end. It was Ghost who knew what to do. Silent as shadow, the pale direwolf moved closer and began to lick the warm tears off Samuel Tarley's face. The fat boy cried out, startled, and somehow, in a heartbeat, his sobs turned to laughter. John Snow laughed with him. Afterward, they sat on the frozen ground, huddled in their cloaks, with Ghost between them. John told the story of how he and Rob had found the pups newborn in the late summer snows. It seemed 1,000 years ago now. Before long, he found himself talking of Winterfell. "Sometimes I dream about it," he said. "I'm walking down this long, empty hall. My voice echoes all around, but no one answers. So I walk faster, opening doors, shouting names. I don't even know who I'm looking for. Most nights, it's my father. But sometimes it's Rob instead, or my little sister Arya, or my uncle." The thought of Benjen Stark saddened him. His uncle was still missing. The old bear had sent out rangers in search of him. Sir Jeremy Riker had led 2 sweeps, and Quarren Halfhand had gone forth from the Shadow Tower, but they had found nothing aside from a few blazes in the trees that his uncle had left to mark his way. In the stony highlands to the northwest, the mark stopped abruptly, and all trace of Ben Stark vanished.
"Do you ever find anyone in your dream?" Sam asked.
John shook his head. "No one. The castle is always empty." He had never told anyone of the dream, and he did not understand why he was telling Sam now. Yet somehow it felt good to talk of it. "Even the ravens have gone from the rookery, and the stables are full of bones. That always scares me. I start to run then, throwing open doors, climbing the tower 3 steps at a time, screaming for someone, for anyone. And then I find myself in front of the door to the crypts. It's black inside, and I can see the steps spiraling down. Somehow I know I have to go down there, but I don't want to. I'm afraid of what might be waiting for me. The old kings of Winter are down there, sitting on their thrones with stone walls at their feet and iron swords across their laps. But it's not them I'm afraid of. I scream that I'm not a Stark, that this isn't my place, but it's no good. I have to go anywhere. So I start down, feeling the walls as I descend, with no torch to light the way. It gets darker and darker, until I want to scream." He stopped, frowning, embarrassed.
"That's when I always wake."
His skin, cold and clammy, shivering in the darkness of his cell, Ghost would leap up beside him, his warmth as comforting as daybreak. He would go back to sleep with his face pressed into the direwolf's shaggy white fur. "Do you dream of Hornhill?" John asked.
No, Sam's mouth grew tight and hard. I hated it there.
He scratched Ghost behind the ear, brooding, and John let the silence breathe. After a long while, Samuel Tarley began to talk, and John Snow listened quietly, and learned how it was that a self-confessed coward found himself on the wall. The Tarleys were a family old in honour, bannermen to Mace Tyrell, Lord of Highgarden and Warden of the South, the eldest son of Lord Randall Tarley. Samuel was born heir to rich lands, a strong keep, a storied two-handed greatsword named Heartsbane, forged of Valerian steel, and passed down from father to son near 500 years. Whatever pride his lord father might have felt at Samuel's birth vanished as the boy grew up plump, soft, and awkward. Sam loved to listen to music and make his own songs, to wear soft velvets, to play in the castle kitchen beside the cooks, drinking in the rich smells as they snitched lemon cakes and blueberry tarts. His passions were books and kittens and dancing, clumsy as he was. But he grew ill at the sight of blood, and wept to see even a chicken slaughtered. A dozen master-at-arms came and went at Hornhill, trying to turn Samuel into the knight his father wanted. The boy was cursed and caned, slapped and starved. One man had him sleep in his chainmail to make him more martial. Another dressed him in his mother's clothing, and paraded him through the bailey to shame him into valour. He only grew fatter and more frightened, until Lord Randall's disappointment turned to anger and then to loathing.
One time, Sam confided, his voice dropping from a whisper, two men came to the castle, warlocks from Carth, with white skin and blue lips. They slaughtered a bull oryx and made me bathe in the hot blood. It didn't make me brave as they promised. I got sick and wretched. Father had them scourged.
Finally, after three girls and as many years, Lady Tarley gave her lord husband a second son. From that day, Lord Randall ignored Sam, devoting all his time to the younger boy, a fierce, robust child more to his liking. Samuel had known several years of sweet peace with his music and his books. Until the dawn of his 15th name day, when he had been awakened to find his horse saddled and ready. Three men-at-arms had escorted him into a wood near Hornhill, where his father was skinning a deer.
"You are almost a man grown now, and my heir," Lord Randall Tarley had told his eldest son, his knife laying bare the carcass as he spoke. "You have given me no cause to disown you, but neither will I allow you to inherit the land and title that should be Dickens. Heartsbane must go to a man strong enough to wield her, and you are not worthy to touch her hilt. So I have decided that you shall this day announce that you wish to take the black. You will forsake all claim to your brother's inheritance and start north before evenfall. If you do not, then on the morrow we shall have a hunt, and somewhere in these woods your horse will stumble, and you will be thrown from your saddle to die. Or so I will tell your mother. She has a woman's heart, and finds it in her to cherish even you, and I have no wish to cause her pain. Please do not imagine that it will truly be that easy should you think to defy me. Nothing would please me more than to hunt you down like the pig you are."
His arms were red to the elbows as he laid the skinning knife aside.
"So, there is your choice. The night's watch."
He reached inside the deer, ripped out its heart, and held it in his fist, red and dripping.
"Or this."
Sam told the tale in a calm, dead voice, as if it were something that had happened to someone else, not to him. And strangely, John thought, he did not weep, not even once. When he was done, they sat together and listened to the wind for a time. There was no other sound in all the world. Finally, John said, "We should go back to the common hall."
"Why?" Sam asked.
John shrugged. There's hot cider to drink, or mulled wine, if you prefer. Some nights Darien sings for us, if the mood is on him. He was a singer before, well, not truly, but almost, an apprentice singer.
How did he come here? Sam asked.
Lord Rowan of Golden Grove found him in bed with his daughter. The girl was 2 years older, and Darien swears she helped him through her window, but under her father's eye she named it rape. So here he is. When Maester Aemon heard him sing, he said his voice was honey poured over thunder. John smiled. Toad sometimes sings too, if you call it singing. Drinking songs he learned in his father's wine sink. Pip says his voice is piss poured over a fart. They laughed at that together.
I should like to hear them both, Sam admitted, but they would not want me there.
His face was troubled.
He's going to make me fight again on the morrow, isn't he?
He is, John was forced to say. Sam got awkwardly to his feet.
I'd better try to sleep.
He huddled down in his cloak and plodded off. The others were still in the common room when John returned, alone but for Ghost.
Where have you been? Pip asked.
Talking with Sam, he said.
He truly is craven, said Gren. At supper there were still places on the bench when he got his pie, but he was too scared to come sit with us.
The Lord of Ham thinks he's too good to eat with the likes of us, suggested Geron.
I saw him eat a pork pie, Toad said, smirking. Do you think it was a brother?
He began to make oinking noises.
Stop it, John snapped angrily.
The other boys fell silent, taken aback by his sudden fury. Listen to me, John said into the quiet, and he told them how it was going to be. Pip backed him, as he'd known he would, but when Haldor spoke up, it was a pleasant surprise. Gren was anxious at the first, but John knew the words to move him. One by one, the rest fell in line. John persuaded some, cajoled some, shamed the others, made threats where threats were required. At the end, they had all agreed. All but Rest.
You girls do as you please, Rest said. But if Thorn sends me against Lady Piggy, I'm going to slice me off a rasher of bacon.
He laughed in John's face and left them there. Hours later, as the castle slept, three of them paid a call on his cell. Gren held his arms while Pip sat on his legs. John could hear Rast's rapid breathing as Ghost leapt onto his chest. The direwolf's eyes burned red as embers as his teeth nipped lightly at the soft skin of the boy's throat, just enough to draw blood.
Remember, we know where you sleep, John said softly.
The next morning, John heard Rast tell Albert and Toad how his razor had slipped while he shaved. From that day forth, neither Rast nor any of the others would hurt Samwell Tarly. When Sir Alistair matched them against him, they would stand their ground and swat aside his slow, clumsy strokes. If the master-at-arms screamed for an attack, they would dance in and tap Sam lightly on breastplate or helm or leg. Sir Alistair raged and threatened and called them all cravens and women and worse, yet Sam remained unhurt. A few nights later, at John's urging, he joined them for the evening meal, taking a place on the bench beside Haldor. It was another fortnight before he found the nerve to join their talk, but in time he was laughing at Pip's faces and teasing Gren with the best of them. Fat and awkward and frightened he might be, but Samwell Tarly was no fool. One night he visited John in his cell.
"I don't know what you did," he said. "But I know you did it."
He looked away shyly.
"I've never had a friend before."
"We're not friends," John said. He put a hand on Sam's broad shoulder. "We're brothers." And so they were, he thought to himself, after Sam had taken his leave. Rob and Bran and Rickon were his father's sons, and he loved them still, yet John knew that he had never truly been one of them. Catelyn Stark had seen to that. The grey walls of Winterfell might still haunt his dreams, but Castle Black was his life now, and his brothers were Sam and Gren and Halder and Pip and the other Karsauts, who wore the black of the night's watch.
"My uncle spoke truly," he whispered to Ghost.
He wondered if he would ever see Benjen Stark again to tell him.
Eddard.
"It's the Hans Tourney that's the cause of all the trouble, my lords," the commander of the City Watch complained to the King's Council.
"The King's Tourney," Ned corrected him, wincing. "I assure you, the Hand wants no part of it."
"Well, call it what you will, my lord. The knights have been arriving from all over the realm, and for every knight we get 2 free riders, 3 craftsmen, 6 men-at-arms, 12 merchants, 24 hoors, and more thieves than I dare guess. This cursed heat has half the city in a fever to start, and now with all these visitors, last night we had a drowning, a tavern riot, 3 knife fights, a rape, 2 fires, robberies beyond count, and a drunken horse race down the street of the sisters. The night before, a woman's head was found in the great sept, floating in the rainbow pool. No one seems to know how it got there or who it belongs to."
"How dreadful," Varys said with a shudder. Lord Renly Baratheon was less sympathetic. "If you cannot keep the king's peace, Janus, perhaps the City Watch should be commanded by someone who can." Stout Jarly Janus Slint pulled himself up like an angry frog, his bald pate reddening.
"Aegon, the dragon himself, could not keep the peace, Lord Renly. I need more men."
"How many?" Ned asked, leaning forward. As ever, Robert had not troubled himself to attend the council session, so it fell to his hand to speak for him.
"As many as can be gotten, Lord Hand."
"Hire 50 new men," Ned told him. "Lord Baelish will see that you will get the coin."
"I will," Littlefinger said.
"You will. You found 40,000 golden dragons for a champion's purse. Surely you can scrape together a few coppers to keep the king's peace." Ned turned back to Janus Slint. "I will also give you 20 good swords for my own household guard, to serve with a watch until the crowds have left."
"All thanks, Lord Hand," Slint said, bowing. "I promise you, they shall be put to good use."
When the commander had taken his leave, Eddard Stark turned to the rest of the council. "The sooner this folly is done with, the better I shall like it." As if the expense and trouble were not irksome enough, all and sundry insisted on salting Ned's wound by calling it the Hand's Tourney, as if he were the cause of it. And Robert honestly seemed to think he should feel honored.
"The realm prospers from such events, my lord," Grand Maester Pycelle said. "They bring the great the chance of glory, and the lowly a respite from their woes."
"And put coins in many a pocket," Littlefinger added. "Every inn in the city is full, and the whores are walking bow-legged and jingling with each step."
Lord Renly laughed. "We're fortunate my brother Stannis is not with us. Remember the time he proposed to outlaw brothels? The king asked him if perhaps he'd like to outlaw eating, shitting, and breathing while he was at it. If truth be told, I oft-times wonder how Stannis ever got that ugly daughter of his. He goes to his marriage bed like a man marching to a battlefield with a grim look in his eyes and a determination to do his duty."
Ned had not joined the laughter. "I wonder about your brother Stannis as well. I wonder whether he intends to end his visit to Dragonstone and resume his seat on this council."
"No doubt as soon as we have scourged all those whores into the sea," Littlefinger replied, provoking more laughter.
"I've heard quite enough about whores for one day," Ned said, rising. "Until tomorrow." Harwin had the door when Ned returned to the Tower of the Hand. "Summon Jory to my chambers, and tell your father to saddle my horse," Ned told him too briskly.
"As you say, my lord."
The Red Keep and the Hand's Tourney were chafing him raw, Ned reflected as he climbed. He yearned for the comfort of Catelyn's arms, for the sounds of Rob and John crossing swords in the practice yard, for the cool days and cold nights of the north. In his chambers he stripped off his council silks and sat for a moment with a book, while he waited for Jory to arrive. The lineages and histories of the great houses of the Seven Kingdoms, with descriptions of many high lords and noble ladies and their children, by Grand Maester Melian. Pycelle had spoken truly. It made for ponderous reading. Yet John Aaron had asked for it, and Ned felt certain he had reasons. There was something here, some truth, buried in these brittle yellow pages. If only he could see it. But what? The tome was over a century old. Scarcely a man now alive had yet been born when Melian had compiled his dusty lists of weddings, births, and deaths. He opened to the section of House Lannister once more, and turned the pages slowly, hoping against hope that something would leap out at him. The Lannisters were an old family, tracing their descent back to Lan the Clever, a trickster from the Age of Heroes, who was no doubt as legendary as Bran the Builder, though far more beloved of singers and tale-tellers. In the songs, Lan was a fellow who winkled the Castleys out of Castle Rock with no weapon but his wits, and stole gold from the sun to brighten his curly hair. Ned wished he were here now, to winkle the truth out of this damnable book. A sharp rap on the door heralded Jory Cassell. Ned closed Malian's tome and bid him enter. "I promise the city watch 20 of my guard until the tourney is done," he told him. "I rely on you to make the choice. Give Alan the command, and make certain the men understand that they are needed to stop fights, not start them." Rising, Ned opened a cedar chest and removed a light linen undertunic. "Did you find the stable boy?" "The watchman, my lord," Jory said. "He vows he'll never touch another horse." "What do you have to say?" "He claims he knew Lord Aaron well. Fast friends they were," Jory snorted. "The hand always gave the lads a cupper on their name days," he says. "Had a way with horses. Never rode his mounts too hard, and brought them carrots and apples, so they was always pleased to see him." "Carrots and apples," Ned repeated. "It sounds as if this boy would be even less use than the others." And he was the last of the four Littlefinger had turned up. Jory had spoken to each of them in turn. Sir Hugh had been brusque and uninformative, and arrogant, as only a new-made knight can be. If the hand wished to talk to him, he should be pleased to receive him. But he would not be questioned by a mere captain of guards, even if said captain was 10 years older and 100 times a swordsman. The serving girl had at least been pleasant. She said Lord John had been reading more than was good for him, that he was troubled and melancholy over his young son's frailty, and gruff with his lady wife. The potboy, now Cordwainer, had never exchanged so much as a word with Lord John, but he was full of oddments of kitchen gossip. The Lord had been quarrelling with the king. The Lord only picked at his food. The Lord was sending his boy to be fostered on Dragonstone. The Lord had taken a great interest in the breeding of hunting hounds. The Lord had visited a master armourer to commission a new suit of plate, wrought all in plain silver, with a blue jasper falcon and a mother-of-pearl moon on the breast. The king's own brother had gone with him to help choose the design, the potboy said. No, not Lord Renly, the other one, Lord Stannis. Did our watchman recall anything else of note? The lad swears Lord John was as strong as a man half his age. Often went riding with Lord Stannis, he says. Stannis again, Ned thought. He found that curious. John Arryn and he had been cordial, but never friendly. And while Robert had been riding north to Winterfell, Stannis had removed himself to Dragonstone, the Targaryen island fastness he had conquered in his brother's name. He had given no word as to when he might return. "Where did they go on his rides?" Ned asked. "The boy said they visited a brothel." "A brothel?" Ned said. "The Lord of the Eyrie and Hand of the King visited a brothel with Stannis Baratheon?" He shook his head, incredulous,
wondering what Lord Renly would make of this titbit. Robert's lusts were the subject of ribald drinking songs throughout the realm, but Stannis was a different sort of man, a bare year younger than the king, yet utterly unlike him, stern, humourless, unforgiving, grim in his sense of duty. The boy insists it's true. The hand took 3 guardsmen with him, and the boy says they were joking of it when he took their horses afterwards. Which brothel? Ned asked. The boy did not know. The guards would. A pity Lysa carried them off to the Vale, Ned said dryly. The guards are doing their best to vex us. Lady Lysa, Maester Coleman, Lord Stannis, everyone who might actually know the truth of what happened to John Arryn is 1,000 leagues away. Will you summon Lord Stannis back from Dragonstone? Not yet, Ned said. Not until I have a better notion of what this is all about and where he stands. The matter nagged at him.